Charlie Lovett, son of an English professor, was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. After attending Davidson College, he went into the antiquarian book business. Though he left the book business in the early 90s, he continued to be an avid book collector. He now has a large and growing collection of rare books and artifacts connected to Lewis Carroll and his world. In fact, his most recent acquisition is Carroll's own 1888 typewriter. Charlie has written numerous articles and books about Carroll and has lectured on the Alice in Wonderland author across the U.S. and Europe, including at the Smithsonian, Harvard, and Oxford. Charlie received his MFA in writing from Vermont College. He and his family then went to live in England and immersed themselves in the culture for six glorious months. After returning to the U.S., Charlie became a successful playwright. His big breakthrough as a novel writer came when he combined two of his passions, rare books and the English countryside. The Bookman's Tale was a resounding success. Today we'll speak to Charlie about his new title, First Impressions. Welcome, Charlie, and thanks for joining us on the Book Report.
Thank you for having me.
Early on in First Impressions, a guy in a bar laments, "What really gets me is these Austin fangirls running around pretending the sun rises and sets with some chick who wrote soap operas 200 years ago." So, Charlie, how is it that Jane Austen is still so amazingly popular?
You know, I reread several of her novels to prepare for writing my novel, and I think one of the reasons is she writes about the same issues that people struggle with today, with issues of interpersonal relationships and making choices and young people making their way in the world. And I found it all quite relevant, actually, to my own fictional heroine, to study the paths of her fictional heroines and see how they handled those sorts of issues.
Right. You wrote the book with two storylines. What were the challenges in creating the book in this way?
Well, you wanted to be sure to intercut at the right places. And in this particular case, I wrote this book. I would write 40 or 50 pages of the 1796 storyline that involves Jane Austen as a main character. And then I'd write 40 or 50 pages of the present-day storyline, the mystery about the rare book that involves Sophie Collingwood. And then I would sort of figure out how to intercut those pieces so that we could follow these parallel stories and there would be connections between them that became clear based on how one story ends a chapter and then the next story begins a chapter.
Right. Introduce us to Mr. Mansfield.
Richard Mansfield is a fictional character. Some people have asked me to clear that up, whether he's real or not real. And he is a friend that I gave to Jane Austen. He is four times her age. He's 80 years old when she's only 20. But he's a retired clergyman who has dabbled in writing a little bit himself and becomes a mentor for Jane and someone who encourages her on her path as a writer. He sees in her the genius that we all can see retrospectively, but he's seeing in a 20-year-old young woman who's just starting out in her life as a writer.
And introduce us to Sophie, Winston, and Eric.
Sure. Sophie is she's about 25 years old. She's just graduated from Oxford. She's in the present-day storyline, and she, like some of Jane Austen's characters, is trying to sort of figure out what the next step in her life is and where to go. But she's fascinated by books, and old books in particular, so she takes a job at an antiquarian bookstore. And one of the people that she meets through this job is Winston, who's a sort of dashing-looking publisher who's looking for this rather obscure book, which it turns out another customer is also looking for. And previous to taking the job, she's also met this American person who you just quoted earlier in the interview, Eric, who seems to be, you know, sort of a slacker, and she's not quite sure what to make of him. And as the story progresses, I hope the reader will start to sense that perhaps one of these characters might turn out to be a Darcy character and one of them might turn out to be a Wickham character. But Sophie's really not quite sure which one is which and who she should trust and where her loyalty should lie.
Right. You know, I was fascinated to learn that some collectors go after multiple editions of the same book just to sort of delight in the differences of the printing. Tell us more.
Well, it's absolutely true. My father, for instance, was what we call a single-title collector. He collected Robinson Crusoe, and it's a book that's been in print constantly since it was first published in 1719. So he has really, over his 700 copies, a history of publishing, of printing over those almost 300 years. And in the same way, I wanted to sort of explore this idea that on rare occasions, we as collectors, we think the first edition is the most valuable one. But every once in a while, there's an edition that's not the first edition that's the most valuable one. And so I wanted to come up with a rare book where the second edition would be priceless and the first edition would be worthless. And asking myself why that might be gave me what I think is a very interesting book for Sophie to be on the trail of, and the book that sort of thrusts her into this Jane Austen mystery.
We're speaking with Charlie Lovett on The Book Report.
Right. How did you become a collector of all things Lewis Carroll?
Well, when I was a child, I used to listen to these long-playing records of an English actor named Cyril Richard, who most people probably know as Captain Hook in Peter Pan, reading Alice in Wonderland. And I listened to those records for years before I ever actually read the book on paper. And so as a young man, intrigued by my father's hobby and interested in following in his footsteps, I thought, well, I've enjoyed Alice in Wonderland, and that is a book that's been illustrated by many different illustrators and published in many different languages. And so I went down that rabbit hole, and now I have a house full of things that are related to Alice and to her creator.
You know, one of the characters describes his view of heaven as reading great books in beautiful places. Quote, Proust in Paris, Dante in Florence, and Jane Austen in the English countryside. Have you done this?
Well, I haven't read Proust in Paris or Dante in Florence, but I've certainly read Jane Austen in the English countryside. My wife and I have a cottage in Oxfordshire that we spend a few weeks a year relaxing in, and a small community that we're a part of. And I was actually over there when I was first working on the ideas for First Impressions. I traveled down to Steventon, where Jane spent the first 25 years of her life. But I also spent some lovely days just sitting in the cottage, rereading Jane Austen's novels. And it is a marvelous place to do it, because so much of what she writes about is seeped in the English countryside, and you know, people taking walks and people going on visits to these lovely houses, and to be surrounded by all that while you're reading in that world was a lovely thing.
I've visited Jane's home in Chawton and saw her writing desk. It was so easy to picture her looking out onto the main street, pen in hand. Have you traveled to all of her home sites?
I have, and the thing that I find so remarkable about that very little table that you mentioned is to think about, I think about my writing desk, which is, you know, a fairly large desk with piles of papers all over it, and then a computer, which is very handy if you happen to be, you know, editing and moving things around. And she had this tiny little almost circular table and a quill pen and some paper, and she produced some of the greatest novels ever. It's a very humbling thing to stand and look at that table and imagine that not only did she write these wonderful novels, but she wrote them with what to us seem like, you know, very simple tools.
Which is your favorite Austen work?
I think probably Sense and Sensibility. I mean, Pride and Prejudice is such an easy one to go to, and it is marvelous. But there's a lot of things I like about Sense and Sensibility. I like, because Jane herself, for the last years of her life, lived with her widowed mother and her unmarried sister, this idea of the women sort of living in the household together without a man that you get in parts of Sense and Sensibility, I think, to me, really feels connected to her experience. And I just love the story. You know?
For those who don't know, why is it that Jane never married?
Well, you know, I'm not really a Jane Austen expert. It's very interesting. I'm starting to get questions about Jane's life. And when I was writing her, I was careful not to read too much of her biography. I really wanted her character in my novel to emerge out of her novels rather than out of her biography, although I wanted to get the facts of her life straight. But we do know, or we believe, that she had a flirtation. We're not quite sure how serious it was at one point as a young woman. And she did have one proposal, which she rejected. But for the most part, she lived her life with her family and without romantic attachment.
What one piece of advice would you give to someone who wants to start collecting a 20th century author, for example? Who would you collect and why?
Gosh, it's a hard question, but I think the main thing is to collect someone that you love. Collect what you love to read. I don't see any point in having books on my shelves if I don't want to take them down and look at them and read them and share them with other people. So I would absolutely go where your passions are. And then beyond that, simply, you know, look for copies that are in great condition. Especially with 20th and 21st century books, that's something that collectors are always looking for, is good condition and that the dust jackets are still there and those kinds of things.
What's next for you?
Well, next year I have a Christmas book coming out. I'm very excited about that because I've never done a holiday book before. And it is a it's a sequel to Charles Dickens' famous book, A Christmas Carol, but I've written it sort of in the voice of Charles Dickens. I sort of compare myself to a stand-up comic doing impressions. I wanted to think, what would it have been like if Dickens had come back to that character and that book 20 years later and written about what Ebenezer Scrooge was up to at the time. So it was great fun to work on. We're in the midst of looking for an illustrator right now, so it'll be a slim little volume that'll be available for the Christmas season. And then I'm also working on a new novel that is set in an English cathedral library, and so it will be all about medieval manuscripts and all the various intrigues that happen in a setting like that over 1,000 years or so.
Any final thoughts about first impressions?
Well, I hope people enjoy the book. One of the questions I've gotten is what do people want to take away from it? And I certainly want people to just have a fun read. And a couple of different people have used the word romp to describe this work, which makes me very happy because I want people to enjoy reading a nice story. But I hope also it might encourage people to either go back and reread Jane Austen or perhaps to read Jane Austen for the first time, because if I can guide some people in that direction as well, that would be something really wonderful.
Well, Charlie, your book was a great fun to read. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.